I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. Former Vice President Joe Biden is hoping that three times is a charm. He announced today he's running for president after failing in 1998 and 2008 and hoping to defeat a crowded field of candidates for the nomination. In his video posted this morning, he said President Trump's defense of racists and Nazis protesting in Charlottesville in 2017, quote, stunned the world and shocked the conscience of this nation.
He said there were, quote, some very fine people on both sides. Very fine people on both sides? With those words, the President of the United States assigned a moral equivalence between those spreading hate and those with the courage to stand against it. And in that moment, I knew the threat to this nation was unlike any I had ever seen in my lifetime.
Joe Biden has the name recognition advantage, and his association with President Obama will play well with some of the party's base. The Democratic Party, though, has moved left since Obama was in the White House. Is Biden a good fit for 2020? And we asked former Pennsylvania governor, former DNC chair, and Biden supporter Ed Reddell to join us on Radio Times. Governor, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
You know, if Joe Biden's conscience was shocked in 2017 at the Charlottesville rally, what took him so long to make this official announcement?
Well, he's run for president, as you said, two times, and he knows how difficult it is, and he knows what a strain it is on your friends and family. So he had the luxury, because he's so well-known and so well-liked among Democrats, he had the luxury of waiting a little bit of time and assessing whether he wanted to do this, what his chances were, whether the Democrats had someone who could win in the fall if he stayed out. I think all those factors finally led him to decide to run.
What do you think he brings to this crowded field? And with his entrance to the race, we're talking about 20 Democrats that want this nomination. What sets him apart?
Well, first, you set it apart by his experience. Look, experience counts. Being able to do a job well, depends on, at least initially, depends on your familiarity with the job and the tasks involved. Not only was he vice president for 8 years, and as you saw in President Obama's ringing statement, he was a very impactful vice president and almost a partner to the president. So he brings those 8 years of incredible experience on the job. He brings 30-plus years in the Senate, where he's chair of Judiciary Committee, chair of Foreign Relations. There's not one aspect of what we do as a nation, domestically or foreign policy, that Joe Biden is not familiar with. And he's done them all, and he's got things done, and he's shown the ability to reach across the aisle and actually get some things done, make some progress.
Do you think Democrats, especially Democrats in a primary, though, do they want experience?
Yeah, I think they do. And I do quarrel with, and, you know, I think you're great, but I do quarrel with your statement that the party's moved to significantly to the left. If you look at the 18 election results of our 43 new congressmen and women who won, the vast majority, 80-85%, were moderates who ran in moderate purple districts. Seven governors, we took back seven Republican-held state houses, governor's mansions, and the seven Democrats who won were all basically moderate, left of center Democrats. So I think the party still, and the vast majority of Democrats, are moderate, left of center Democrats who would support a candidate with Joe Biden's policies and values. But I think when people are electing a president, Marty, they look for leadership qualities. They look for personal qualities. And every Democrat knows that Joe Biden is an incredibly decent, honorable man with great values, the direct polar opposite of Donald Trump. They also know, they can see the polls, that he right now is the most likely candidate to beat Donald Trump. And that's before Donald Trump has used his whole card. His whole card in this election, he can't win on anything he's done. He's going to have to convince the voters that the Democratic Party is leading us towards socialism. He said that in his State of the Union address. Mm-hmm. And he's got to convince them that there are far-left programs that the nation can't afford. They're going to cause massive tax increases. And he's got to trouble making that argument against Joe Biden.
Well, the reason I said that the party seems to be moving left is things like a Medicare for All getting a loud applause at a number of these rallies. Of course, that's a centerpiece of Bernie Sanders' candidacy, free health care or free child care, free college. That's what Elizabeth Warren is talking about. So while I agree with you, there are certainly moderates that won in 2018. When you look at the party as a whole, it does feel like it's moving a little bit left.
Well, I think it's because the people that the media pays attention to, like AOC, got 13,000 votes to win her primary in a district that had 780,000 people. Our four congressmen, women, newly elected women in southeast Pennsylvania that we call the Fab Four, they all got three or four times as many votes as AOC did. But you don't hear from them, or the press doesn't go to them, because they're responsible, moderate, left-of-center Democrats. So I think it's who the media emphasizes. Look, most of the progressives actually lost. Our gubernatorial candidate in Florida, our gubernatorial candidate in Georgia, Beto O'Rourke in Texas, they all lost their elections. In Philadelphia area, the only progressive Democrat running for Congress in our area was Mr. Wallace in Bucks County, and he lost.
Let me ask you about a couple of things related to Senator or Vice President Biden's experience. Of course, the Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas hearing, which he has apologized for, saying he really didn't think he did Anita Hill enough favor, if I can just put it that way, wasn't supportive of enough of her allegations. There were questions about what he said about busing. This was, of course, decades ago. The crime bill, which did increase incarceration rates, his vote for the Iraq war, his apology sort of being a little too handsy with women. Do you think Democrats are in a forgiving mood?
I think none of those things are significant. I think Democrats are like most people, independents and most Republicans. They judge you on the totality of your record. Like I saw something in the paper that then Senator Biden was criticized for his role in passing a gun bill in 1986. But everybody knows that Joe Biden led the fight for the Brady Bill in 93 and was the prime author of the assault weapons ban, which did something for 10 years that I'd give my right arm to have America reenact today. So people are looking at the vice president's total record, looking at what he's done in office, not necessarily what he said on some issues. And again, voters are smarter than you and I, the press and the inside baseball politicians. Look at Virginia, where Governor Northam, everyone knows, posed in blackface for his college yearbook picture. Yes. Well, 55% of African Americans in Virginia, in a poll that was out 2 weeks ago, said they didn't want him to resign as governor because they don't really care what he did as a 23, 24-year-old kid. They care about what he's done as governor. And I think that's what people care about, Marty. I think we try to stir up controversy and sort of invent issues.
Let me ask you about I thought it was interesting that Vice President Biden chose Charlottesville really as the centerpiece of his message this morning as his way of taking on President Trump. I'm not in the habit of repeating the president's tweets, but nonetheless, he tweeted this morning. Welcome to the race, Sleepy Joe. I only hope you have the intelligence long endowed to wage a successful primary campaign. It will be nasty. You'll be dealing with people who truly have some very sick and demented ideas. But if you make it, I will see you at the starting gate. Governor, what do you think it takes for a Democrat, perhaps this Democrat, to beat President Trump? And I add that we are in a relatively good economy, and that often means a victory for the incumbent.
Well, that's correct, Marty, but the economy was humming in November of 18, and 9 million more Americans voted for Democrats in that congressional election than they did for Republicans. It was a significant repudiation of President Trump. Good economy or no good economy. Look, I think we need someone who can appeal to those working class Democrats who voted for Donald Trump in 96. I mean, in 2016, who voted for Trump in Michigan, in Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania, in Ohio, in places like that. And who is the candidate best able to communicate with those voters? Without a question, there's no one that's close second to Vice President Biden. Those are the voters that he resonates with best of all, and you're going to see that in the rally in Pittsburgh on Monday.
What, though, I mean, the real stalwarts, and we have just a couple of minutes, Governor, but the real stalwarts of the Democratic Party are black women. I mean, they are the ones who have most conscientiously voted for Democratic candidates, including the candidate for the highest office. What does Biden bring for them?
Well, he brings all of the good things he's done over the course of time. His leadership, is willing to stand up on difficult causes. And most of all, his steadfast support, partnership, and work for President Obama. You know, President Obama, I assume, is not going to endorse a candidate in the Democratic field. But it's not a coincidence that he didn't put out a statement when anyone else declared for president. Mm-hmm. And he put out a statement of his own volition this morning saying how impactful Vice President Biden was, what a great partner he was, how he supported him through thick and thin. And that's the thing that Joe Biden has going for him. African-American voters understand what a partnership he had with President Obama, how he helped the president, how he stood by him. You never heard any backbiting or criticism from the vice president. He was a stalwart, and people understand that and appreciate that. And when you combine that with his leadership, his experience, and his record, I think he'll do well with African-American voters. And that's not to in any way denigrate Kamala Harris and Cory Booker's appeal with African-American voters.
Here's a comment from Hazam on our Facebook page. He says, we have so many young and talented people. Why do we still cling to old white men? Governor Rendo, what do you say to Hazam?
Because we're looking for the best person to be president. We're not looking for exciting campaigners. We're not looking. Look, if this was finding out who the best campaigner is and who's the most exciting in the field, let's not hold any primaries. Let's give it to Mayor Pete. Mayor Pete is clearly the most exciting and new and best campaigner. I mean, he's come out of nowhere. He's the mayor of a town of 90,000, which when Notre Dame's not in session is probably around 50,000. But he's a great campaigner. But I love Mayor Pete. I endorsed him early on for party chair. But do I think someone who's been mayor of a basically small town has the experience to be president? I don't. I'd like Mayor Pete to run for Senate in Indiana, win the Senate seat. It could help us take back the Senate, and then run for president down the line. Hmm. But that's what I think voters are looking for. I don't think age matters. I don't think gender matters. They're looking for the best person. And in my judgment, on experience, on record, on decency, on values, Joe Biden's head and shoulders above the field. And it's a good field. I just think he's got a terrific record of service.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Governor Rendell, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Max Marty, have a good day.
You too. Former Pennsylvania governor, former DNC chair, and as you just heard, a supporter of Joe Biden for the Democratic nomination for president. We're going to be talking about some of the other candidates after this very short break. We have two reporters, two journalists standing by, much more to talk about. We got lots of clips as well. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. There are 20 Democrats who want to be president, with former Vice President and former Delaware Senator Joe Biden's announcement today. He made President Trump's both sides defense of the Nazi rally in Charlottesville a centerpiece of his opening message, saying he can defeat Trump.
I believe history will look back on 4 years of this president and all he embraces as an aberrant moment in time. But if we give Donald Trump 8 years in the White House, he will forever and fundamentally alter the character of this nation, who we are. And I cannot stand by and watch that happen.
While Biden has name recognition, experience, and a long political resume, this is a different party from the one that elected Barack Obama in 2008. Although Governor Rendell disagreed with me, it has largely moved left, touting things like universal health care and free college, free child care, taxing the rich. Well, we have two reporters who are joining us for the rest of the hour. Holly Otterbein with us here in our Philadelphia studio, reporter for Politico, used to report for WHYY, the Philadelphia Inquirer and Philadelphia Magazine. Holly Otterbein, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It's great to be in Philly.
Nice to have you in Philly and joining us from Washington, D.C., from the NPR studios down there, Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief for Huffington Post. And Amanda, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Great to be here.
And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We realize that the election is many months away, but we are interested in the candidates who interest you. So do join our conversation. Holly, you were listening in as I was talking to Governor Rendell about former Vice President, former Delaware Senator Joe Biden. What do you make of Biden's announcement?
You know, it really reminded me of the argument that Hillary Clinton made in 2016. It was very focused on Trump and Trump's personality and what Trump is doing to the country. Of course, in 2016, it was what he would do to the country. It wasn't about the economy. It wasn't about policy. That was a major criticism of Hillary Clinton in 2016, that by not doing that, that was part of the reason that she lost. Maybe this is the right time for the message. Mm-hmm. Years have passed. There's a good chance that perhaps this will appeal to voters in a way that it didn't in 2016. But we'll see. That was the thing that struck me about it.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what happens next. There is a big fundraiser tonight in Philadelphia, we should say, and politics is all about money these days. And I believe he's going to a union hall in Pittsburgh in a couple of days, I believe, on Monday. Amanda, you're down there in Washington, D.C., and there was a lot of hemming and hawing coming from Joe Biden and his supporters about whether he'd toss his hat into the ring or not. Do you think he was just waiting to be the last one in? Because it looks like he is at this point.
Yeah, I think he wanted to wait to be the last one. And he that's a luxury that he has. I mean, in a lot of ways, he and Senator Bernie Sanders are running a little bit of a different race than everyone else. They're already established front runners. So they're essentially running more of a general election campaign. That's why you see Joe Biden focusing so much on Trump, as Holly was saying in his introductory video. You know, you have the whole other field of candidates, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, and everyone else, trying to distinguish themselves, stay in there, and just trying to be one of the last people standing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, I think that Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders come in with enormous advantages. That doesn't mean they'll be the nominee. As we've learned from 2016, anything can happen. But it's a different race for them.
Well, speaking of Bernie Sanders, let me play a clip. And this is from a Fox News town hall. It was on April 15th. It was actually in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And Holly Otterbein was there. And here he is talking about really a signature part of his campaign, which is his Medicare for All plan.
Now, what we're talking about actually is stability, that when you have a Medicare for All, it is there now and it will be there in the future.
And Holly, I mean, that's a very short clip, but nonetheless, it gets to, first of all, this enthusiastic support at a Fox News town hall. I thought that was interesting. But he is really running on this.
Yeah. I mean, that was a great night for Bernie Sanders. He was able to parry with the hosts and he found himself somehow leading a call and response with a Fox News audience with him, you know, them praising his proposals. It was really interesting. And it was part of a strategy that his campaign has. They had just had him go through a tour through the industrial Midwest, including Pennsylvania, in order to try to make the argument that he is the most likely candidate to beat Trump in the general election. This is something that Democratic voters are really concerned about, more of them than ever want someone who can beat Trump, beat the Republican, rather than someone who matches their ideology. So that was a great ending for him of that tour, you know, having Fox News audience members cheer him in a county in Pennsylvania, a key state for Trump, that voted for Trump.
Well, Amanda, going back to you, and it does, I mean, you know, every day is it brings some new, interesting and different things to talk about. But it looks like as it stands now, it's really Joe Biden versus Bernie Sanders for who's going to be on the top of the heap.
Right. They're definitely up there. You know, there's you know, candidates, I mean, right now it's so hard to tell because it's so early. That's why when you're looking at these horse race polls of who's up in the polls, so much of it right now is name recognition. Mm-hmm. And then you can see a candidate like Mayor Pete from Indiana right now. He's getting a boost in fundraising. He is surging because basically no one knew who he was, and now he's getting a lot of attention. But now he needs to put in the time and hire the people to establish a ground game in a lot of early states, something he didn't have the resources to do early on, and something that a lot of candidates like Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren have been doing for a long time. You know, there's this theory of electability, and this is something that Joe Biden is really going to be stressing, that he is the most electable candidate to go up against Donald Trump. He can win back the states that Democrats lost in 2016. He can fight Trump. You know, that is a case that every candidate is trying to make, but in different ways. And you, when you talk to voters, they're all concerned about electability, but it's not clear what that is. Is it the people who can win back states? Is it people who have the policy positions that seem to be where the party is? You know, there are lots of different ways at looking at it, but Joe Biden is going to be talking about being electable a lot.
Well, and it'll be interesting, Tess, to find out what the definition of electability is for 2020. Let me read a couple of comments. One from Andrew, who says, I'm a registered Democrat that would never vote for Biden because he's just running against Trump, not because he wants to change the country with policy. I would say he's not alone in making Trump the target of his campaign. Facebook comment from David, who says, whoever survives the process for the Democrats gets my vote, even if I have to hold my nose again while pressing the vote button. And Holly, we were talking about this earlier. I mean, it seems that Pennsylvania, as it was in 2016, is a critical state for just about everybody.
Absolutely. It's key to Trump's campaign. They say they're counting on it in order to win the general election. And it's obviously key to a lot of Democrats in the primary, in that they want to argue that they can beat Trump in Pennsylvania. I should add, to the commenter, to be fair to Biden, his campaign says that they are going to run on policy and that, you know, very soon he's going to talk about his economic plan. But that just wasn't what was focused on in his announcement video. It's also interesting on the electability question that Bernie Sanders did this trip through the industrial Midwest, including Pennsylvania, where Biden was born.
Scranton, right, as we know.
Yeah, of course. Right before Biden jumped into the race, right? I think that they know that in order to, you know, stay on top or get ahead of Biden, that they're going to need to make that electability argument.
Well, let me play, speaking of Elizabeth Warren, let me play a clip from a town hall meeting she had on Monday. This was a CNN town hall meeting, and she has a talk about policy. She's got a policy for just about every problem in the country. Here's Senator Elizabeth Warren.
If we put that 2-cent wealth tax in place on the 75,000 largest fortunes in this country, 2 cents, we can do universal child care for every baby 0 to 5, universal pre-K, universal college, and knock back the student loan debt burden for 95% of our students and still have nearly $1 trillion left over.
And again, that was Senator Elizabeth Warren. It's Radio Times, and we are talking about the 20 Democrats who want to win the nomination and beat President Trump. Talking with Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief for Huffington Post, joining us from the NPR studios down there in Washington, D.C. Holly Otterbein with us here in Philadelphia, reporter for Politico. Amanda, let me just get your response to how you see Elizabeth Warren. Then we'll get a couple of callers to join our conversation. And she does seem to have a policy for just about every problem that faces the country.
Right. She is the one coming out with not just policies, but policies that are sort of defining the race. The wealth tax, for example, breaking up tech companies. She was the first major candidate to come out and call for the House to start impeachment proceedings against Donald Trump. And that then makes the other candidates address them. And so she's sort of setting the agenda in that way. But she is actually being hurt from what my reporting by the electability argument. We recently ran a poll, and we found that 30% of voters, Democratic voters, say that they think the electorate would be less likely to vote for a female candidate because of her gender, compared to just 4% who think a male candidate would face a similar disadvantage. And when we go around to events, we hear a lot of people say, I like Elizabeth Warren, but I don't know if she can win. And a lot of her supporters see a gender bias in that and see, you know, too many comparisons to Hillary Clinton because they're similar age, similar hair color, even though they're very different people. And so that's something I think Warren is facing a little bit.
Does that apply more to Warren than to, say, Kamala Harris or some of the other women who are running for this nomination?
Well, they're facing it as well. But I think Warren is facing it a little bit more because, again, I mean, honestly, just for some people, she looks like Hillary Clinton. She's also came in with the most name recognition. So simply because she was the most high profile woman, she was facing those comparisons more. But, she, you know, again, she has a very clear lane. She is distinguishing herself by these ideas and, you know, sort of this ideological purity. And she has a very clear agenda. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is what she's hoping that voters, you know, when they're looking for a progressive agenda, that they'll go toward her.
I saw someone describe her as a cheerful policy wonk. Again, I don't know if that works in for 2020 or not. Anything you want to add to that, Holly, before we get Lauren from Washington State to join us?
She's also struggled with fundraising right out of the gate. And I think she also, you know, at every single moment is being compared to Bernie Sanders because they you know, sort of exist in this similar left-wing ideological lane. And that's hurt her a little bit because, you know, when you compare her fundraising to his, obviously it's going to be less. She did not run a presidential campaign before. And yet she finds herself, you know, every time the fundraising numbers come in or there's some sort of event, she finds herself being compared to him. Recently, that actually worked, I think, where in the CNN town hall this week, it was perceived by many that she performed better than him. So sometimes the comparisons work for her, but when it comes to fundraising and other issues, I think it's hurt her.
And of course, Bernie is a Democratic socialist. She says, I'm a capitalist who wants to fix the rigged system, just to sort of differentiate themselves. Let me get Lauren from Washington State to join our conversation. And Lauren, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Go ahead.
I called in. I'm traveling through the area right now. I am listening locally, but I'm from Washington State. I've been traveling the United States for the past year. I've been to all 50 states. I'm 26, and in 2016, I was heavily involved in the California race for Bernie. I was a delegate that got to go to the DNC in Philly. And through all these experiences, have developed a real pulse on what voters are looking for.
And Lauren, if you can give it to us in 30 seconds or less.
Mm-hmm. Having a platform saying that you're just not Trump is not strong enough to A, win, and B, hold that office and do what it can. Someone like Bernie Sanders, who's passionate about environmental politics, feminism, giving felons the right to vote, there's a lot of issues that someone like Joe Biden in the past, who silenced Anita Hill, who fought for the Patriot Act, takes money from Wall Street, fought to overturn Glass-Steagall. There's a lot of reasons that Bernie Sanders and his track record and experience beats out Joe Biden hand to hand. And not being Trump, it's just not an electable quality.
I hear you. No, Lauren, thanks for calling into Radio Times. And Amanda, I wonder whether there is obviously the goal is to beat the incumbent in the White House. But making that a central part of any campaign, is that going to be a problem for some of these Democratic candidates?
It sort of undergirds everything. I mean, every Democratic voter, their ultimate goal is to beat Trump. But again, as we talked about earlier, there was so much criticism of Hillary Clinton for focusing so much on Trump. I mean, Hillary had plenty of policy ideas out
there.
She sure did. But they weren't getting as much attention as, like, we have to defeat Trump. And I think people thought her, you know, a core message of her campaign wasn't well defined enough. You know, again, as Holly said, Biden is planning to release policy proposals. I don't expect them to be as progressive as what you see Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders putting out there. And, you know, Joe Biden, the other thing that he's going to have to address, as the caller alluded to, is his long history of taking positions that really are out of step with where a lot of people in the party are these days.
Well, there is a question of the kind of purity test and just how pure do you want your candidate to be. Let me play one more clip, and this is Senator Kamala Harris, and she was at a rally a couple of weeks ago, March 26. We could have picked many things. We picked this one, and she's pitching her federal teachers raise at a rally.
Right now, teachers are making over 10% less than other college-educated graduates, and that gap is about $13,000 a year. And I am pledging to you that through the federal resources that are available, we will close that gap.
Amanda, let me go back to you. She was an attorney general. She was a prosecutor in California. And some people have used that as a criticism of her candidacy. How do you see her in this race?
Well, I think she's an incredibly strong contender still. I think she's considered part of that top tier. And her strength is really going to be with Black women voters. I mean, she is, she would be the first Black female president of the United States. She has an incredibly strong network from her time in college, her sorority, and this is something that when she announced her candidacy, she really played up. And there is a lot of affection for Kamala Harris amongst the Black community, and especially Black women who tend to sort of drive the party, as you were talking about with the governor.
Yes.
So, but there is some skepticism about her time as a prosecutor. She has pitched herself as a progressive prosecutor, but a lot of her policies on things like truancy and going after parents and families, that is something that she has had to answer for. Will it be enough for voters, I think? Do they believe that she's come far enough? That's something that she's facing. But it's really, honestly, nothing compared to what Joe Biden is going to have to do, because he was in the Senate, from 1973 to 2009. And there, from Anita Hill to so many other things, it's going to be a lot that he hasn't really addressed yet.
Holly, we're almost up on a break here. Anything you want to add to what Amanda just said there?
Senator Harris had a really great breakout when she first announced. She had a gigantic rally that brought many, many people. She's also been a top fundraiser. So I agree. She's definitely at the top of the pack. And I think that having Biden in the race indeed does help her in a way, because it makes her past policies that have gotten criticized by progressives look very different now that Biden is in.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking again about the 20 people that want the Democratic nomination for president, with the announcement earlier this morning of former Delaware Senator, former Vice President Joe Biden. Talking with Holly Otterbein and Amanda Turkle, and with you, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with Holly Otterbein, who's a reporter for Politico, and Amanda Turkle, Washington bureau chief for Huffington Post, again about the many Democrats who want to be president of the United States, including Mayor Pete Buttigieg of
South Bend.
All of a sudden, I'm showing my East Coast snobbery of South Bend. Discussing his faith, why he thinks Christian values are democratic values, and this was an appearance he did on The View in March.
When I go to church and the scripture that I hear, it is about protecting the poor. It is about looking after those who are marginalized in society. There's a lot about welcoming the stranger, which to me includes welcoming the immigrant. So much of what Christ's teachings are about have to do with the way that we take care of the least among us.
Amanda Turkle, what do you make of his candidacy?
I mean, I think he has captured a thirst in this party for someone different, honestly, someone younger. You have the front runners of the race right now, Warren, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, who are all, I believe, like late 60s, 70s.
70, I think, yeah.
And then, so Pete Buttigieg is someone sort of like Beto O'Rourke, who represents something different, someone younger. He, has a slightly different resume than people. And, he's incredibly sort of media friendly. He does things like speak lots of languages. He's basically very internet friendly, I should say. And so that has helped him catch on. And it just shows that some people in the party aren't really super happy with the options out there right now.
Well, we should say he's a married gay man. He's a veteran. He's a Rhodes Scholar. As you mentioned, a man, he speaks multiple languages. And let me read a Facebook comment from Eileen. I like Mayor Pete. He is a refreshing change, like a breath of fresh air, not promising the unachievable. But it is interesting, Holly. You could look at Elizabeth Warren, heavy on policy. Pete Buttigieg, kind of light on policy. But people, not everybody, but some people like what they see.
Yeah, he has talked about how he is laying out his values before he gets into the weeds on policy. And for some in the party, that's been fine at this stage in the race. I mean, it's early. I think one of the things that he's really benefited from is taking a lesson out of President Trump's playbook, which is going on media, all media that you can, all media that invites you, right? Trump was known for doing this in the 2016 election and for years before, and just talking to anybody. And so he did that when other candidates, particularly some of the more front-runner candidates, were just not quite as available. And I think that that really helped him. It got him in front of a million people and helped him raise in the polls.
And how much, Amanda, do you think he's, you know, the bright new shiny object, that there was something, at least for the media as a whole, to talk to someone who sounded different?
There's probably a little bit of that. And that's the big question for him, is how much can he sustain this? Or is this, you know, where every candidate, often you see in these races with big fields, you saw this a bit in the 2016 race in the GOP field, where candidates sort of have their moments. They rise and they fall. And, you know, it's tougher for the lesser known candidates to sustain it. So now what Pete Buttigieg has to do is take this money he raised, the $7 million, the increased name recognition he has, and now actually, like, you know, go to Iowa, New Hampshire, and build the ground game to get the votes that he needs rather than just getting sort of national media attention. And there are indications that people in states like New Hampshire and Iowa really do like him, but that's how he needs to sustain this going forward.
Let me get Todd. Looks like Todd calling us from Overbrook Farms. And Todd, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, I just wanted to share a concern. You use the term free college tuition, and a lot of people do, as if that's now part of the Democratic platform, and it's not. It's a wonderful thing, and it can be done, and it can be done incrementally following the European model. But it's not something that's going to happen now, and I wish that people would stop using it in conversation as if it is a thing that is. Personally, I'd prefer to see our military budget reduced by about a third, and that money going to regular K through 12 education. That's the kind of thing that will lift up our whole country. Having free college tuition is a vote killer for the working class, because they'll see that as, and it'll be pitched to them that they are going to pay for the college tuitions of the wealthy. It's going to be pitched that way.
I hear you.
I'll vote against it.
I hear you. I mean, there is no Democratic platform. We've got 20 candidates, each of whom are offering something different. And certainly Senator Warren has made this idea not the centerpiece, but certainly a centerpiece of what she is selling or touting to the American public. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in terms of response to that. Anything you want to say to our caller, Holly?
Yeah, I would just agree with you that it's not.
It's all early.
Yeah, it's early. Some candidates have raised concerns about the idea of free college tuition. So I think it's definitely up for debate in the primary.
No question. Thanks so much for calling into Radio Times. You can call as well. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We are talking about the some 20 candidates who want to win the Democratic nomination for president and, of course, take on current President Donald Trump. A Facebook comment from Cynthia says, I can't say who I support until I see them in debate action. And Amanda Turkle, I'm sure we will have lots of debates. I don't know how you squeeze 20 people onto a dais somewhere, but do we know when the debates are going to get started?
They're going to be starting in June, and then there will be another one in July. And then I think they're taking August off and basically one every month after that. And it looks like for the first two, because there are going to be so many people qualifying for the debates, they're going to split them up. So there will be two debates on consecutive nights, prime time. And so there will be 10 people the first night, 10 people the second night,
wow,
and it'll be all mixed up. So unlike the Republicans, where they had the top tier candidates in one debate and the JV candidates another one, this is going to be completely random.
And JV is what? Just level of support, amount of money that you've raised? Is that the qualifier?
Well, for the Republicans, it was polling. Democrats this year tried to do something different. In order to qualify for the debate stage, it's not only do you meet a threshold of are you getting enough support in the polls, but it's are you how much money are you raising from small dollar donors and how is it distributed across the state? So they want to the DNC took very seriously the criticism that it, you know, was tipping the scales toward Hillary Clinton. It didn't pay enough to Bernie Sanders, who was getting this grassroots support. So they're now trying to reflect that in fundraising. I mean, there's a good chance that if you're getting the money in fundraising, you're also getting those polling numbers, but they want this time to allow someone on the stage who maybe isn't showing up in the polls but is getting the money from a wide swath of the public.
Let me get, looks like Julian from Gilbertsville to join our conversation. Then we'll play a Senator Cory Booker clip. Julian, you are on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Hi, Amanda. The question that never gets asked, and I don't understand why, is why are we having this conversation now, 18 months from the election? I know of no other democratic country where every 2 years there's a two-year candidacy. I come from the UK originally. I'm a dual citizen. They call elections within 6 to 8 weeks. You get a limited amount of funds to advertise, and then the elections are held. It's not just the voter fatigue. It's the amount of money that's spent. It's obscene.
Well, welcome to America, Julian. I mean, this is how we do it, for better or for worse. And I was talking to Holly Otterbein because she and Amanda and many others are going to be covering this for the next 2 years, essentially. So this is how we do things. Anything, Holly, you want to say to Julian?
I agree with Julian completely. And I think that maybe one of the candidates can put out a policy proposal, Liz Warren, that requires that, you know, campaigns are only a certain amount of time, much less time than is now. That would be great.
Well, Amanda, you're down there in Washington, D.C., inside the Beltway. So is there even a chance in hell that's going to happen?
No. But, you know, also that disturbs a lot of people. The longer these campaigns go, the more money they cost. And a lot of people find that obscene as well.
But Julian did talk about the kind of fatigue. I mean, voter fatigue. I'm assuming most people probably are not paying a whole heck of a lot of attention to what's going on. But nonetheless, do you think that's an issue, Amanda?
Well, sure. I mean, voter fatigue is definitely an issue, but it's also a reason to, again, be cautious of these polls right now, because a lot of voters aren't paying attention. You know, we think that, oh, everyone in the country knows who Mayor Pete is now. I mean, that's not actually true. A lot of people don't know who, you know, Kamala Harris is, Elizabeth Warren is. There are plenty of people who don't really know much about Joe Biden. So, you know, right now, when you see these polls and you see that Joe Biden is leading, this is all name recognition. Joe Biden has been around a long time, so people know him. People aren't paying attention yet. And so the polls are so fluid, and there's so much room still for people to change their minds.
Let me play one more clip. And this is Senator Cory Booker speaking at his official presidential campaign at a rally in Newark, New Jersey.
We will create a federally funded savings account for every child born in America that starts at birth. And as they grow up, it'll give the lowest income kids in our country up to $50,000 to pay for college, put a down payment on a home, or jumpstart a small business.
There's a policy, Holly.
Yeah, so the question when Cory Booker came into the race was, will his message of positivity make any sense in the 2020 election, right? When many people are feeling like the country is headed in the wrong direction and they want a fighter to stand up to Trump, will someone who is, you know, sort of kind and spreading that as his message be able to survive? And so far, he hasn't had a breakout moment, really. Mm-hmm. And he's struggled a little bit with small dollar donors. But it's so early. I think it's way, way, way too early to tell. And he's been able to stay in that sort of mid-range in the polls fine. And I think he's got enough money to, you know, more than enough money to keep on going. So we'll have to just wait and see.
How do you see him? And I mean, is he, in a sense, channeling Obama, you know, about a better America?
He is, right. And in some ways, he and Joe Biden have something in common in that their approach to things is really stressing unity, sort of bringing people together. And they're both looking at, you know, Joe Biden is very much going to be reminding people that Obama picked me as the vice president. So you may have criticisms of me on issues like race and things like that, but Obama trusted me. So you should, too. That's sort of, you know, in a very blunt way, a very crass way, sort of his message. Cory Booker is also going to be looking at Obama's coalition that he built and trying to build that together in a way that he can get a path to the White House.
Let me read a couple of more comments, and then we'll get Chris from Philadelphia to join us. An email from Roy: if your aim is for a kinder, gentler version of the current establishment oligarchy, then Joe Biden is your man. If you're looking for progressive change, then your choice would be Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders. Their policies poll wildly popular across the political spectrum. Barbara says the past presidents who have succeeded in two terms have had larger-than-life personalities. The candidate the Dems choose needs to have charisma, and Biden doesn't have it. A call from Larry says Warren is the best candidate, and unfortunately she won't win. It is frustrating to watch. Let me get Chris from Philadelphia to join our conversation. And Chris, go ahead. You are on Radio Times.
Hi. I think we need to focus not on who is quote-unquote electable, like Joe Biden, or better, O'Rourke, people who kind of skew white and male, but really focus on someone who's going to rile up the progressive base with bold policy, like Elizabeth Warren. I think that's going to be the ticket to getting a Democrat in the White House.
Well, we're back to, Amanda, this whole electability question, especially electability in these very turbulent times. Anything you want to say back to Chris?
I mean, I would definitely also warn people against focusing too much on electable. Jeb Bush was supposed to be very electable. John Kerry was also supposed to be very electable. And you know who wasn't? Donald Trump. And he won. So, you know, voters are not great at predicting electability. Pundits aren't great at predicting electability. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of this, but history is not voted well for so-called electable candidates.
I hear you. Holly, anything you want to add to that?
I mean, it's completely understandable that the Democratic voters, you know, more than anything, want to beat Trump, of course. But yeah, I mean, it's like ironic that this is the year that they care about it the most, because the idea of electability was just blown up in everyone's faces. So I'm interested in seeing, as time goes on, you know, what Amanda said, what does electability mean to people? Right. How do they define it? Is it defined by white and male? Is it defined by just what you happen to like? I mean, how many people are planning on voting for the person that they think is the most electable and not the person that they like?
That they
the
actually
most?
Like. Interesting test there.
Yeah. I mean, it'll just be interesting to see what people actually decide is electable.
Amanda, we're almost out of time, but it is interesting that there are 20 candidates. I forget how many candidates there were when Donald Trump was running, but what do you think explains why so many people are interested in this job?
I mean, I think people feel like that this is, it's so wide open right now. There really is no leader of the party. I guess you could argue Bernie Sanders in some ways, because he has sort of set the agenda and he ran in 2016. But I think right now that Democratic candidates sort of see a national emergency. They know that the party wants to get rid of Donald Trump. It's wide open. And so this is sort of testing what direction the party's going, because it's really sort of not the Obama party anymore, or maybe it is. That's what Joe Biden thinks. But it could just go in so many directions.
Well, I appreciate both of you joining us today in Radio Times. Amanda Turkle, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And she's Washington Bureau Chief for the Huffington Post. Holly Otterbein, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And she's a reporter for Politico. She has been covering Bernie Sanders and a lot of the goings-on here in the state of Pennsylvania. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. And we appreciate all those calls and comments to the show. I'm sure we will be talking more about the 2020 election over the next 18 months or so. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.